Fellow Americans, this is a recording made at the request of thousands of people across our country, as well as many thousands of prisoners in Soviet slave camps, with whom John Noble spent 9 1/2 unforgettable years. This story is recorded that you might know the truth about communism. And now, here is John Noble to tell you his story in his own words. Mr. Noble.
This is John Noble. My story is not a pleasant one, for it concerns not only those unfortunate ones behind the Iron Curtain, but it also concerns every American citizen, including you. I was little concerned about communism. I was little concerned about the political developments inside of our own country. Not at all concerned about the spiritual matters back home in Detroit, Michigan, where I was going to school. I was just an average American boy. My father, out of nothing, built up his business, a business that proved to be very prosperous. Materially, we were blessed beyond compare. But then my father became ill, had to attend medical treatments over in Europe, in Germany, in Czechoslovakia. But while Dad was over there in Europe, he invested money. He purchased factories here and factories there. We had most everything that the world had to offer. But while Dad was taking care of his health, my mother, brother, and I were taken over to Europe to study in one of my father's factories. And while we were beginning to do so, and the war broke out, we as Americans were locally interned under Hitler, and we were kept under this local internment throughout the entire war until 1945, when World War II came to an end. And we, of course, as Americans, expected to find our freedom. And yet, it proved to be quite the other way around. But just shortly before the end of the war, on February 13, 1945, as possibly some of you recall, the greatest air raid of World War II was flown, the air raid against the city of Dresden. Dresden, Eastern Germany, the city in which we were held throughout the entire war. We were in the city that night. We were in the basement seeking protection. And as these 4,200 American and British bombers were flying over that city, they dropped their bombs within approximately 50 minutes. Of course, we were in the basement, as I say, seeking protection. Friends, possibly relatives, flying above, dropping the bombs. The walls were shaking, the plaster was crumpling from the ceiling, the windows blown out, the roof partly uncovered. But physically, nothing had happened to us. But from this day on, through the end of the war, many people in Dresden, people in other parts of Eastern Germany, were literally on their knees praying, "Lord, protect us from the West and let the Reds come in." Merely because they hadn't experienced anything like this from the East, not knowing how horrible it could be. But as these last few weeks of the war came to an end and the Soviet troops did begin to move in, it was May 6, 1945. About 7 in the morning, after the troops had moved up to the city limits, we pulled up the stars and stripes on the roof of the building. And suddenly, all over the city, as far as we could see, white flags coming out all over. The city was surrendering. But as these Soviet troops moved in, those very same people that had been praying, "Lord, protect us from the West," were again on their knees, but their prayers were different. Their prayers were different because they prayed, "Lord, why didn't you take our loved ones? Why didn't you take our possessions with the bombs instead of having the Soviets take them?" Because those things that the Soviet troops displayed as they moved in were so much more horrible than what had happened during that terrible air raid in this one night. If we could give you a picture of what was taking place on this May 6th as the Soviet troops were moving in, it would be a picture of a beaten army, the Soviet army. The German troops had moved out of the city the night before, even though we hadn't known it. But when these Soviet troops moved in at 8, and we saw them coming in through the streets and through the alleys, it was a beaten army, as I say, torn and tattered uniforms. Some of them even partly German uniforms on their bodies, some with a boot and a shoe, some even with rags wrapped around their feet, many of them having beards, not having shaved themselves for a long time. Most of them even looked as though they hadn't washed themselves for a week or two. Almost all of them completely intoxicated, and many of them infected with the various diseases. And as they moved in, they not only came in as an occupation force, but they came in with a force of rape and murder. immorality, and brutality of which we here in America have no conception. Those very people that had been praying before had changed their prayers. What they saw here was a godless satanic force moving in. These things have not changed. Communism today is the same communism it was in 1945. The face, of course, has changed. The average citizen in the other parts of the world has received an impression that these things no longer go on. But undercover, it's the same today as it was when the Soviet troops moved in. We as Americans had the stars and stripes flying across our roof. The Soviets did not set foot on the property. We had contact even with the American authorities in the West, and they assured us that nothing could happen, seeing that we're Americans and the Soviets are allies. But only 2 days later, Soviet officers and guards moved in, tore down the stars and stripes, tore them to pieces, burnt them, and arrested both my father and myself. My mother and my brother were kept under house arrest, while Dad and I were taken off to prison. But at the time when they tore down the stars and stripes at our place, they tore them down in eastern Germany, wherever they could find them. Also, we were not the only Americans arrested at that time. Many, many more. Figures that cannot be determined exactly. But while Dad and I were taken off to prison, a new life began. A new life that brought many changes. Unexpected things were facing us. I had never been in a prison before. This Dresden prison, a 5-story prison building, the cells all around the edges, a hollow center in the middle, just small catwalks around the sides for these 5 stories of cells. Dad was put into solitary confinement right across the hall from me in cell number 29. I was in cell number 5. Just a small, naked stone cell, a bunk, a bench, a table, a tin pan, and a spoon. No one to talk to, nothing at all to occupy the mind with, nothing to do, a small window to look out into the sky, and on the other side a solid metal-plated door separating me from the hallway, just a small, tiny spy hole for the guard to look in to see what the prisoner was doing. And I remained in this small cell for approximately 7 months without even setting a foot outside of the door. And during these 7 months, not once an explanation, not once an investigation, not once an answer to all of my questions. My question, why did they put me here? But I was protesting. I was an American. They had no right to do this to me. But the guards just laughed at me. Or just as they keep on laughing to all those other Americans that they still hold in their prisons over there. But I kept on protesting until July 28, 1945, when something began to happen that changed my whole outlook upon life. And this something was a starvation period. A starvation period, of course, its length we did not know. But prior to this first day that we went throughout the whole day without a crumb of bread and without a spoonful of soup, many weeks of inadequate food had worn us down to skin and bones. Being in this physical poor condition, on this July 28th, after this entire prison, 700 people went throughout the day without anything to eat, where they began to knock against their doors. They began to call and to curse and to scream and to beg, and some possibly even to pray. But I too was becoming weaker and weaker. I lay down on my bunk that night, and I had a problem. That problem was, did I have the right to turn to God and ask God for food and for freedom? Well, all those years in the past where I had such a wonderful life, I did not even take time to say thank you for it. I just took all of my blessings for granted, just as possibly many of you take your blessings for granted. I didn't know if I had the right to turn to God and ask God for food and for freedom, since I had ignored him for such a long, long time. But I tried it. I laid down on my bunk and I closed my eyes and I prayed and I asked the Lord for food and for freedom. Inside, something gave me confidence that I was going to receive it. But the next day came and there was nothing. No food, no freedom for the entire prison. I prayed more seriously that second night. Oh, I complained to the Lord how hungry I was, how innocent I was, that the Russians just had no right to do this to me. But the third day came, and there was still no answer to prayer. And I was so disappointed and so discouraged, I said to myself, well, it's useless for me to pray anymore. So I didn't pray. But the next morning, to my surprise, we had a slice or two of bread. We had some watery soup at noon, and we had some watery soup at night, and this made me confused. Confused? Because when I did pray, I did not receive. And then again, when I did not pray, I had something to eat. I didn't know how God answers prayer. I didn't know how to pray. My prayers were typical prayers for us in the Western world, but no prayers at all in the sight of God, because all what they amounted to was, Lord, I want this, and Lord, I want that, but Lord, I don't want this, and Lord, I don't want that. But I didn't understand any better at that time. Well, we had food for 2 days, and then a new starvation period began. A new starvation period that lasted 12 days. 12 days in a row without a crumb of bread and without a spoonful of soup. And as the second starvation period began, I began calling again. The people began to knock again, to curse again, to scream again. Some people going out of their minds. Some people committing suicide. Others being executed. Hundreds literally starving away. And I, too, was becoming weaker and weaker. Actually, the only strength that I received during these days was when I looked through my little spy hole across the hall to my father's cell, when it was time for the water bucket to come around again, and I could see my father as his door was open, stretching out his tin pan, waiting for the guard to fill it. Oh, and I said to myself, well, as long as Dad can stand it, as long as Dad can take it, well, certainly I ought to be able to take it. But it was just about in the middle of the second starvation period when I, too, was physically finished. I was so weak that I couldn't lift my feet off the floor. I couldn't talk anymore. My voice was gone. But that night, as the water bucket was making its rounds, when I could hear the guards unlock one cell after the other, and I could hear one door slam after the other, and they were coming closer and closer and closer to my cell, and as they opened up my door, I could barely slide forward to receive the water. And while the guard was pouring the water into my tin pan, if I would have had the voice to call, I would have called across the hall to my father and would have said, Dad, this is the last time you're going to see me because I'm finished. But I couldn't call. I didn't have the voice to call. And before I knew it, the door was closing in on me again, and I stood behind the closed door holding onto this tin pan of water, holding onto the wall, and looking through the little spy hole, watching that water bucket make its rounds, until it came over to my father's cell, just to see my dad once more. And after his cell was closed, I slid back to my bunk, I drank my water, and I began to pray. But my prayer was different. It was different because I prayed, Lord, close my eyes and keep them closed. I can't stand this any longer. The pains of hunger were just eating me up inside. I just couldn't bear it anymore. I just couldn't stand it anymore. I didn't want to have any part of this world anymore. I just wanted to get rid of everything. But then I added, Lord, if you don't want to close my eyes, then, Lord, you take my life and make it whatever you want it to be, because I'm finished. If there's a life, Lord, it's not mine anymore. Lord, it's yours. And that's where things began to change. From the next morning on, it seemed as though I could walk again. I could talk again. I felt like singing in that cell. Merely because I turned my life over into the hands of God. I mention this whenever I have the opportunity, because the communists wanted to destroy me. They were successful in destroying me up to that moment when I said, Lord, you take over. The communists are determined to conquer the world. The communists are determined to destroy anything and everything that is good in this world. Unless we can get our nation on its knees before God, the communists will get our nation on its knees before communism. There is no in-between. Both Dad and I had survived the starvation, and yet it was many, many months before we found out what really had happened. Out of all of these 700 people that were in the prison at that time, in this Dresden prison, only 22
or 23 survived. That is all. 670-some died, committed suicide, or just simply were executed. But after the starvation was over, there were still approximately 7 months of more or less solitary confinement. And during these 7 months, not once a piece of soap or toothbrush or toothpaste or haircut or shave or bath or anything like that. What we looked like and what we smelt like, well, you could hardly imagine. Not even a piece of clothing to change, not for the men and not for the women. The only time when I slipped out of my clothing was when I turned it inside out to crack the lice and the fleas and the bedbugs and so on. And we had loads of them. Sometimes, when I speak to various groups across the country, and some of the small children are sitting in the front, and when I mention 7 years, 7 months, no soap, no toothbrush, why, I see the smile going across the faces of these young ones. It was right down their alley. But for us in the prison, it was horrible. It is hard to find the words adequate to describe these conditions. But we survived. And it was early 1946 when I was fortunate to get a job in that prison. To do work like scrubbing floors, cleaning up the hallways, passing out water, later on passing out food. And from March 1946 on, I was put in charge of the office work. These records that I had were the records of 21,000 people that had passed through this one prison in less than a year. But also while I was doing the work, I saw the daily procedures. I saw how they were bringing new prisoners in, how they were forcing these people to sign confessions. Some of the tortures that these people were subjected to were too gruesome even to talk about. Often I was called to the prisoner doctor to help him take care of some of these individuals, sometimes men, sometimes women, sometimes even only boys or girls. As they came back from the investigation, taken to the doctor's office, there I helped the doctor pull out the pieces of skin and blood and shirt that had been whipped into each other from on their backs, from necks down to their hips. The Soviets did not use whips to do this. They used copper tubing. But after the individual broke down and signed whatever the Soviets wanted them to sign, they were taken across the hall to the so-called courtroom. And there, without a judge, without a jury, without a trial, merely a piece of paper stating that they had been sentenced to the various years. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, lifetime, or even death sentence. After receiving the sentence, those that had been sentenced to the various years were sent on to the concentration camps in Eastern Germany or the Soviet Union. But those that had been sentenced to death, they remained in their cells for approximately 6 weeks. And after the 6 weeks were over, one after the other was taken out into the hallway. There in the hallway, they were stripped of their clothing. No matter if man, woman, boy, or girl. The youngest that I personally saw being executed was a 12-year-old. But after their clothing was stripped, I had to take the clothing off the floor. Two guards stepped to their side, a junior officer behind them. They marched them out the side door. 2 minutes later, they came in to take the next one. Marched the next one out, and the third one, and the fifth one, and the tenth, sometimes 20, and sometimes even up to 30. And as the last one was marched out, we workers had to roll barrels of gasoline through the building, which was poured over the bodies, and they were burnt. And this was going on week after week, month after month, year after year, and is still going on today. After seeing these things go on for 14 months, I was shipped on to the concentration camps of Mühlberg and Buchenwald. Camps most notorious under Hitler, and yet more so notorious under Stalin. Mühlberg, a camp located some 40 kilometers north of Dresden, also on the Elbe River in eastern Germany. A camp of 16,000 prisoners at the time when Dad and I arrived. These 16,000 were held there as far as they survived for approximately 2 years before being shipped on to the camps of Buchenwald. But during these 2 years, we buried close to 9,000 out of these 16. In Buchenwald, a camp at the time when we arrived, counting 14,000 prisoners. But here at Buchenwald, also again during a period of close to 2 years, we buried close to 10,000. 10 out of 14. They didn't gas them. They didn't burn them. They just simply starved them to death and buried them. But after spending these 4 years in the various camps with my father, I was separated. Dad was taken back to prison. I was taken to court, sentenced, and shipped off to the Soviet Union. The court sentence was very simple. A tremendous hall in the prison of Weimar. Red drapery all around the sides, red carpet on the floor. One table in the middle with a red tablecloth over it. A girl sitting on one end, an officer at the other. And as I stepped in, the girl asked my name. I told her. She took a piece of paper and pushed it towards me and told me to sign it. I said, "What is it? I don't understand Russian." This girl said, "This paper states that you have been tried by a court in Moscow and have been sentenced to 15 years of slave labor." I said, "For what? For what reason? I've never been accused of anything." The girl said, "If you have any question in regard to your sentence, ask in the camp to which you will be taken." And this camp was high up in the Soviet Union, in the Arctic Circle. But what I found in the Arctic Circle, what I found in the Soviet Union, and what I received, the insight I received into this godless satanic system, I will tell you on the other side of this recording.